This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Welcome one and all to the Damage Report. It's today, which is today's Thursday, right? Yeah, it's Thursday. Hey, it's John, I'm alone and I don't know where I am. I'm lost and cold and very afraid. But thank you all for joining me on this journey of fear. We have a lot of news that we're talking about through the course of this first hour, which as you can tell will be solo, but we will be joined by a very special guest coming up in the aftermath. And regardless of whether it's the first hour or the aftermath, we have got some fascinating stuff to talk about. It's not one of those news days where like, one story is really dominating the news cycle, but honestly, sometimes that's good because that means we can cast our eyes wide and focus on news from across the political spectrum and have a lot of fun in doing it. We've got some of our favorite figures in American politics to critique, giving us very good excuses to do that along the way throughout this hour. We're going to be talking about what seems to be the ending of the besties relationship between Mike Johnson and Marjorie Greene. Very sad to see that. Unfortunately, we've got conspiracy theories about the 2024 election being stolen. We have a totally legal effort to rig the 2024 election, which we'll be talking about back to back. That's fun. And Ted Cruz being given huge sums of money for his podcast, and he does not want you to ask questions about that. So we're going to be diving into those numbers a little bit and see what we can figure out about that. That's all coming up in the first hour. If you are listening on the podcast, there's more to come in the aftermath. So after you get done listening to this podcast, go rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and then head over to the YouTube channel and you can see even more content. With that said, we are giving out Blue Apron gift cards once again. So if you're watching live, get those comments, tweets, super chats in and you might earn yourself a chance at a $100 Blue Apron gift card. And without further ado, why don't we get into the news?
She and I exchanged text messages even today. We're going to talk early next week. Marjorie's a friend.
Marjorie's a friend, says Mike Johnson. But you know what's sad? One-way friendships. He seems super genuine. He really likes Marjorie Greene. She's his bestie. Or is she? Because she was talking behind his back with another one of her friends. And it doesn't seem like she's big fans of him. Take a look at this.
Mike Johnson has made a complete departure of who he is and what he stands for. And to the point where people are literally asking, is he blackmailed? What is wrong with him? Because right. He's completely disconnected with what we want.
Do you think he is being blackmailed?
I have no idea. I can't comprehend, Tucker, what radically changes a man. He completely changed who he was, funded the FBI, gave him a brand new building, fully funded the Department of Justice that is persecuting everyone on the right and actually targeting our presidential candidate for election this year, literally trying to put him in jail the rest of his life. We don't know who Mike Johnson is anymore, so there's I can't comprehend it.
I believe a lot of what she said there, not the specific claims about the FBI or the DOJ, but some of the stuff like, I can't comprehend it. I have no idea. It's good to see her finally being honest in these interviews. The only honest answer Marjorie Greene can give to a question and interview is, I have no idea. And she should really stick to that more often. But what she said there is, or what's really underlying what she's saying is that she's mad at Mike Johnson. So Mike Johnson is the speaker. Mike Johnson is being arguably exactly what an objective observer would expect him to be as speaker, absent maybe some considerations of how political pressure could cause him to go in a more MAGA-y direction than he's predisposed to. He's a religious whack job who mostly just wants government to kind of function for the benefit of the rich, but he doesn't want it to be utterly shut down. It's wackadoodles like Marjorie Greene that want that. So she's not happy to say he's not the sort of speaker I want, or it would be great if we had an extremist radical as speaker. She has to imply that he's changed, even though he doesn't appear to have. And she can't express how. All she has is a vague idea that he's been blackmailed. And people are saying it. Which people? I don't know. She doesn't know. She doesn't cite any sources. She brings absolutely nothing to that wild accusation. And of course, she's being interviewed by a real journalist in Tucker Carlson, which is why he came back with tough follow-up questions like, do you think he's being blackmailed? Well, thank you for that. She had no sources. She had no evidence. She had no anything. And Tucker Carlson is down for it. Because lest you forget, I know a lot of you don't watch Tucker Carlson. He's not just the regular, insane, right-wing, populist Tucker Carlson. He is and has been since 2000 an out-and-out conspiracy theorist. Every single thing he discusses has to have something secretly working behind the scenes. And Marjorie Greene is very similar, which is why it's not enough for her to be part of a faction in the House that is not the same as the faction that Mike Johnson is ostensibly part of. There has to be something going on behind the scenes. There has to be money changing hands, or like every one of you people are being paid by lobbyists, by business interests. You've never had a problem with that, Marjorie Greene. But all of a sudden he's being blackmailed into doing something wild like funding the government. Which is, by the way, that's what Kevin McCarthy did. And of course, look, she's being consistent in that she hated when Kevin McCarthy did it. Now she hates when Mike Johnson did it. But arguably, that's the sort of person that's going to be able to get the broad support necessary to become a speaker. A person who at least wants things to continue. And look, even if you don't think that this is Mike Johnson's like strong commitment to serious governance, it could at least be political pragmatism, couldn't it? They're in an election year. Shutting down the government is a risky move. People like Marjorie Greene would assume, or at the very least assert, that that's just gonna hurt Joe Biden. But they're in charge. They'd be the reason it shut down. Biden's already doing bad in a number of polls. Do you want to throw a wild card like an extended government shutdown into the election that could potentially shift things up and allow him to recontextualize what's going on and remind people of why it's so dangerous not only to have Republicans in charge, but for them to be specifically in charge of the House? Remember, their margin is down to like one right now, and it might not even last until election day. And so responsible Republicans are terrified of losing their majority coming up in the next few months. She's not worried about that. She's not thinking strategically or tactically or at all. And so just throw wild accusations that he's been blackmailed, or that politically he's someone fundamentally other than who he is. And I'll give you an example of that. She had this to say: people are fed up with Republicans that say one thing and turn around and literally join the flock. I don't know why what's the flock? Like, he's doing bipartisan stuff, so did Kevin McCarthy, and just continue the same old crap everybody's tired of. Not everybody is tired of the government being funded, Marjorie Greene. He has literally turned into Mitch McConnell's twin and worse. He's a Democrat. There's not even any daylight between him and Nancy Pelosi at this point. Now, if you wanted to, you could make a claim like that in a subversive sort of way and talk about the fact that, you know, while they focus on different things in terms of their rhetoric and they take different stances when it comes to social policy, when it comes to the business interests and regulation, maybe there's actually more parity between those two than is popularly acknowledged. That is not what she is doing here. She's just claiming, well, I hate Nancy Pelosi and I don't like him, so they're the same. That's the best that you can hope from Marjorie Greene. She's really into this, the comparison of him to whoever else she doesn't like, saying his Ukraine first agenda shows he's no different than Mitch McConnell. Ukraine first agenda. Like, he put up so many roadblocks to the funding for Ukraine. Like, the idea is you gave it to him and we didn't get anything, but you could have gotten something. You could have gotten the border security bill that tons of whack job Republicans negotiated for the course of months. You didn't want that, Marjorie Greene, and Donald Trump didn't want that. That's not a problem of Mitch McConnell and Mike Johnson. That's a problem of you, and you should deal with it. But anyway, obviously I enjoy mocking her, perhaps roasting her. I'm not the only one. You can see a lot of that on the mainstream media as well. Here is Jake Tapper.
We should note that Congressman Don Bacon, who I don't know that I would call him a moderate, but he is certainly sane. He's in his from a swing district in Nebraska, framed the situation for Speaker Johnson like this, quote, he's got a gun to his head right now, but we need to have a Churchill, not a Chamberlain right now. He could be on the right side of history. I'm not sure that Marjorie Taylor Greene knows who Churchill or Chamberlain are, but that's a World War II allusion to standing up to Putin in this case, and Hitler back then.
Thank you for defining the illusion. Marjorie Greene might need that explanation, but I don't think she's watching Jake Tapper. I think all of us understood what he was saying there. And he's totally right. And by the way, like obviously in a lot of things, I don't agree with Jake Tapper. I'm not necessarily a huge fan or whatever. But how happy he is to have someone like Marjorie Greene that he can throw around casual insults like that. Because Jake Tapper is not Rachel Maddow or whatever. Like he's supposed to keep it together more and not be as opinionated. But she is so insane and so stupid that even Jake Tapper can throw around things like that. So that's a nice treat for him.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
I have noticed just from living in Washington for so long that a lot of the top decision makers are lying about their personal lives. And there's something, you know, really amiss there. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say Mitch McConnell would be among those. And there does seem to be a connection between the creepiness of your personal life and the deception around your personal life and your willingness to vote with the other side.
Now, that's a theory that he has put out before. If you pay attention to Tucker Carlson, he frequently talks about weird hidden stuff in the personal life that's not talked about publicly. And often he attributes that to Lindsey Graham. But the thing is, just doing it to Lindsey Graham implies that it's based on evidence specific to Lindsey Graham. In this case, the barely veiled idea that Lindsey Graham is secretly gay and he's hiding how he's gay. And that's why he's a Democrat or something. Lindsey Graham is a whack job. What are you talking about, Tucker Carlson? But anyway, Tucker Carlson is wholly untethered to any conception of ethics or journalistic integrity. So now, I guess Mitch McConnell too. Yeah. Mitch McConnell, very weird, creepy home life. What does anyone know about Mitch McConnell's home life? You know what I imagine Mitch McConnell does when he's at home? He slumps into a couch and he doesn't move until he needs to go back to Congress. That's what I imagine he does. I think it's a pretty easy image to conjure up. I honestly pay attention to a lot of crazy rhetoric on the internet. I have to follow what a lot of people say, if it was up to me entirely, I would not have to follow. And even so, I have no idea what he's implying there about Mitch McConnell. But he doesn't have to imply anything, let alone prove it. Him and Marjorie Greene don't like Mitch McConnell at this point on this issue. So they just assert there's something going on. Maybe it's financial, they've been blackmailed, or because that's not going to get their audience fired up as much. Maybe they're weird and creepy. Maybe something's going on. And what does weird and creepy mean? Well, for Lindsey Graham, it means he's gay. We know exactly what Tucker Carlson is saying. For Mitch McConnell, I think it just means that he's gay, honestly. I think that's what he's implying. Maybe there's something else. Maybe he's implying that Mitch McConnell's trans. I don't know. I don't know what qualifies as weird and creepy for Tucker Carlson, but you can see a previous reference. This is in February of this year to Lindsey Graham. He just throws out these wild accusations constantly. And I would say that while you don't often have to think too much about what Tucker Carlson says, he certainly doesn't. When you are a person who is so frequently throwing out utterly baseless accusations of weird private behavior, is it unfair of me? Am I being a jerk to imply that maybe Tucker Carlson is hiding something? And by the way, I'm not trying to imply anything in particular. I'm not asserting that he's gay or whatever. I'm not asserting anything like that. I don't think it's true. I think that he is a perfectly horrible heterosexual person. But that doesn't mean that he's not doing weird stuff. What lurks in his closet? What's he doing in his wood shop? I don't know, but he's very, very interested in the personal lives of other people. And by the way, I would also say, and I don't often talk about this because I think that it's needless, it's unnecessary, and it's below the level of, I don't know, what like I want political rhetoric to be. But if you were going to focus on weird, maybe salacious personal life details, bizarre stuff when it gets to sexuality, and you're doing that well, the person you're talking to is Marjorie Greene. I don't know. Google it. I'm not saying any of that is true, but at least there's somewhat specific assertions that can be proven or disproven. Whereas the stuff about Lindsey Graham, let alone the stuff about Mitch McConnell, he's not even specifying what the theory is supposed to be here. Again, you don't need to Google it to have a problem with Marjorie Greene. Marjorie Greene is horrible for all of the things that she says and does totally in public. We don't need to get into the private stuff, but if you're gonna get into that stuff, Tucker Carlson, I don't know, maybe a little bit of consistency would be nice. Anyway, with that said, there is other stuff going on in the news and we have a lot to cover. So whenever we're ready, why don't we jump into our next topic?
Lena, how much of the 83 million is she going to see?
Zero. And then I'm gonna sue for attorney's fees.
Oh, I can't wait for that.
Oh, yeah.
So she can't go shopping? No. You mean she can't take Rachel out shopping?
She can't buy her France? Oh, wow. I watched that. I said, Reid Hoffman, I hope you're watching. DNC, I hope you're watching. This is the person. This is the person you picked.
Yeah.
I couldn't talk about her cat's name.
She is never going to forget that. I didn't get to say that woman had a cat named Vagina, and it angers me to this day. But that is Alina Habba, technically a lawyer, but more than just technically, obviously strong and bold and confident because she's not in a courtroom. If she was in a courtroom, she'd be a very different Alina Habba. It's not a place where she racks up a lot of W's, but when she's surrounded by a bunch of right-wing chuds who are hanging on her every word, suddenly she's dropping zingers and bombs and she's saying, not only are we not gonna give you any money, I'm gonna sue you for defamation. Now, the interesting thing about that claim, this Alina Habba, like just advancing this wild alternate reality where rather than having presided over some massive legal failures that are gonna cost Donald Trump hundreds of millions of dollars, instead, she's gonna bankrupt E. Jean Carroll for the crime of having been raped by Trump and suffered from years and years of defamation. God damn, does she hate E. Jean Carroll? But anyway, the ironic thing about that is she's saying she's going to sue E. Jean Carroll for lawyer's fees. Okay, here is the issue. As she goes on in that, I think it was like an hours long conversation she had with whoever that gaggle of guys is, she makes a lot of claims about E. Jean Carroll. She talks about the cat. That's free. That's on the house. You're not going to get in trouble for talking about her cat name is named Vagina. It's utterly irrelevant to the case, but I don't need to tell her that. The judge and the jury already told her that. She also repeatedly referred to E. Jean Carroll as being crazy. Crazy in the abstract in general, but also crazy in relation to the claims that she made about Donald Trump. And look, I would assume, okay, that E. Jean Carroll is busy celebrating with the fact that she got $83 million or soon will. Busy with the fact that she's probably gonna sue Trump more because he continues to defame her to this day. I don't think that she has time to act on what I'm about to put forward, but if she wanted to, Donald Trump's claims that she's crazy to lie about Trump having raped her formed the basis in part of the defamation claims that cost Trump so much money. Now, it's not like Alina Habba can claim that she doesn't know that. She was the lawyer in that case. She knows that that stuff is defamatory. To the extent that a person who seems so ill-equipped in the courtroom as her can be. She was technically there. Maybe she can claim that she's barely a lawyer and so you can't expect her to know better. But she is making the same claims that cost Donald Trump so much money. Now look, I know a lot of people are getting excited. I can see in the chat, defamation claims against Alina Habba. I think a case could probably be made. I do not expect that it will go in that direction. But you know, I mean, since Alina Habba is going on this media tour and smearing E. Jean Carroll in all of these utterly insane and misogynistic ways, maybe at least like implying that you might do it, like check her a little bit, you know? Put a little bit of the fear into Alina Habba because she gets in this in the room with these guys or whatever, a show like that. And she knows that she is on the razor's edge. She's in this position right now where she is seen as a Trump loyalist. He still favors her or whatever, but that could change so fast. I mean, based on the facts, it already should. She's costing him so much money. There's very little reason why he should keep her around. And she must be feeling that tenuous position that she has in the MAGA world. And so that's why when she goes on shows like this, she just goes wild and makes wild claims. You know, I'm saying that she's making wild claims. I want to show you some of the wild claims, actually. So let's roll a little bit more of that appearance.
I couldn't talk about her cat's name. I couldn't talk about that. Yeah, this.
Look at these people, bro.
You've talked about using some of Trump's money that you're about to get to help shore up women's rights. Do you know what that might be, what that might look like?
Yes, Rachel.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Tell me.
I had such great ideas for all the good I'm going to do with this money.
Psycho.
First thing, Rachel. You and I are going to go shopping. We're going to get completely new wardrobes, new shoes.
That's really good.
Motorcycle for Crowley, new fishing rod for Robbie. Rachel, what do you want?
Yeah, the lawyers are panicking, by the way. Watch.
Rachel.
Oh, my God.
No, and then if you find the video of her house, there's a video of her. She's got red hair.
90 cats.
That was another one. No, but the cat's name.
You know, look, I got criticized by the audience because I kept bringing up that they keep bringing up the cat's name. But come on, get off my back. She won't stop bringing up the cat's name. And I wish, you know, I don't actually want to talk to Alina Habba, but if I were to talk to Alina Habba for 15 seconds, I would just ask her, let's say you were allowed to mention the cat's name, which the jury definitely knew because you guys kept saying it. What would that do? What exactly? Oh, I thought Trump raped her. I didn't know she had a cat named Vagina. You know, 2 + 2 = vagina cat. Now I'm thinking about it in a totally different way. Or alternatively, okay, no, I guess she has a cat named Vagina. She was still raped, but it's not defamatory anymore because she asked for it because she has a cat named Vagina. And beyond that, she wants to buy her lawyer a motorcycle. Did you see that video? Did you know she has red hair sometimes? You know, when you add all this up, I don't think she was defamed. Again, we have such wildly different standards for being persuaded by things. Me and her. You and the guys in that room, they made the case that he raped E. Jean Carroll. They showed all of the utterly insane things that he said about her. And all they have to come back with is, she's a crazy woman. But that doesn't have anything to do with the lawsuit. It does have something to do with looking good on the right. Because the right wing in general, and definitely every one of those guys, loves nothing more than talking about a crazy woman and being able to mock a crazy woman. And look at her hair. And she's talking about fishing rods and she likes Rachel Maddow. They hate that sort of woman. And so they want to talk about that. And that's fine. They can do that. The guys on the show aren't worried about losing $83.3 million. They're worried about ratings. That's why they pull someone like Alina Habba on. Alina Habba, outside of the possible lawsuit she could be facing for defamation, she's not worried about going to jail or losing money. She's worried about her position in the MAGA world. So you see, they have very different incentives than Donald Trump. They can crow about a cat named Vagina, and that helps them with their ratings, and it helps them with the MAGA world. It doesn't help Trump in a lawsuit. And he doesn't seem to understand that the people he's surrounding himself with don't have the same interests as him. It's not even just not having his best interests at heart. They have interests working in exactly opposite directions. And I don't want him to succeed, so I hope he never wises up to this. So don't tell him or anything. But it's just interesting that he's gone this long without realizing what's going on. Okay, there's so much to talk about. And despite my headache, I'm having a lot of fun. So we're gonna press forward and talk about other news. Donald Trump is now calling on an electoral change to Nebraska, pressuring the legislature to change the way that the state doles out its electoral college votes. If you're not familiar with this, which I'm sure many Americans are not, let alone people outside of the US, most states, 48 of the 50 states in the US, whoever wins the popular vote in an election, in a presidential election, earns all of that state's electoral college votes. That's how almost all of them do it. In the case of Nebraska, though, they instead do it based on the popular vote win for each congressional district, meaning that you can win some, but not all of the electoral college votes. And in the vast majority of elections, that's how you'd expect it would probably work, although not necessarily. So Donald Trump wants that to change, and he posted this to Truth Social. Governor Jim Palin of Nebraska, a very smart and popular governor. That just means I want you to do something. He has no idea how popular or smart Jim Palin is, neither do I. But he wants something, so he's complimenting him. Who has done some really great things. I don't have time to be specific, but trust me, great things. Came out today with a very strong letter in support of returning Nebraska's electoral votes to a winner take all system. Most Nebraskans have wanted to go back to this system for a very long time. Here, let me paste poll results. There's really no time. We'll press forward. Anyway, the thing is, the reason he wants this is not because most Nebraskans want the change. I tried to find polling on this, and what do you know? You can't, because it's hyper specific. I don't think most Nebraskans even realize how the electoral college votes come out. And look, it's a right-wing state, so if you polled them and if you made clear to them that it's in their political advantage to change it, sure, probably most of them do. But it's not like they're pushing for it because that's what the people want, so we have to deliver. There's another reason why they're doing it. It's probably pretty clear. If not, let's break it down. In 2020, Joe Biden won one of the congressional districts' electoral votes from Trump. That means that Trump, who got 58% of the vote there, got 4 out of the 5 Nebraska electoral votes rather than the 5 that he would get if the state was winner take all. So bear in mind though, he got 4 of the 5, that's 80% of the electoral college votes. He only got 58% of the vote. A case could be made that he's already doing quite well for himself, but that's not enough. And so that's pretty much it. I mean, they see it in their political advantage. They could get an extra vote. They want it. There's no ideology. There's no political theory that has to do with this. I'm not even saying that there's a strong ideological case to continue it. It's just the way it's been, and they're changing it because they think it would advantage them. But it might not be clear exactly how. You might think, based on how I described it, it's one vote. Okay, it's something. It's nice to have. No, it's not just nice to have, it might be crucial to have. And here's a hypothetical that should probably make your hair stand on end. Here's a scenario for the 2024 election. In it, Joe Biden wins Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin of the 7 or so swing states that are believed to actually be up for grabs. Mr. Trump wins Arizona, Georgia, and Nevada, in which it could make the difference between a Biden victory and an electoral college tie. If it's proportional, well, not proportional, but like congressional allocation of electoral college votes, Biden becomes president in that scenario. If they succeed in changing it to winner take all, it's a tie. And that is not like, well, what do we do then? No, we know exactly what happens then. In that case, the election goes to the House of Representatives, where the distribution of votes to decide who becomes president is no longer proportional. It's strictly allocated based on the states, and Republicans control more small rural states. That means Trump wins. Now, I'm not saying that this particular scenario of the swing states is super likely, but it's in the realm of possibility. And all you need to do to turn a loss to a win in that case is change how Nebraska works. Now, so far, they have not been successful. The bill apparently sat around too long before Trump decided that that was something he wanted to push for. And the legislative session is nearly over. Nearly over. It's not actually over. There are still a few days. And as of right now, it looks like in a bipartisan fashion, Nebraska actually has a unicameral legislature. Nebraska's weird in a couple different ways. They voted it down. And look, I don't know all the individual state legislators there, but I would say, considering that it is to the benefit of the Republican candidate, and going forward would be to the benefit of all Republican candidates likely, the fact that so many Republicans actually voted against it is principled, I guess. So credit to those unnamed Republicans. But that said, they are now facing a lot of pressure. Donald Trump, who can provide a lot of pressure, is doing that. You have people like Charlie Kirk, who are not even trying to hide the fact that this is nakedly partisan. He's trying to get his viewers to call in, people from outside of Nebraska who don't know about Nebraska, don't care about Nebraska, don't even know. They don't even know that it has a unicameral legislature. They're trying to pressure them to change. And is it impossible to imagine that they would be successful in that? I don't know. Look, if it's the difference between being primaried the next time around, then maybe they change their vote. And look, maybe the expectation is that it's too late to do it this time around, primarying them. And will Donald Trump actually remember next time? Probably not. But if it's you, if you're one of those who joined with Democrats to stop the system from being changed, are you gonna gamble your political future on Trump forgetting about that? Trump is a petty SOB. I think it's more likely that he's not around for the next election than that he suddenly lets bygones be bygones. So anyway, this is a scary potential scenario. Again, I think a case can be made ideologically for either system to work. The thing for me though is the status quo is the way it is. The political calculation in terms of presidential elections has been the way it's been for some time. Changing it now without even providing a smokescreen of some sort of ideological argument for it just doesn't make sense to me. And the reason that I'm so concerned about the hyperfocus on Nebraska isn't just the implications for the 2024 election. It's because, is it impossible that another state would change in this way? Now, like, think about what sort of formula, how this could be formulated. So imagine if you had a state that is controlled at the state level by Republicans and generally goes for Democrats for the presidential race, but the Republicans get 30 or 40% and could expect that they would get a couple congressional delegations, like those areas, to vote for them. What if they were to change to proportional allocation? Would they, is it impossible that they would do that? You have multiple Republican state legislatures, which when a Democrat wins the governorship, they amend the law and the constitution to strip away the Democratic governor's powers. You have it right now, I forget the state, it might be Tennessee, where they are removing the Democratic governor's ability to appoint a replacement senator on an interim basis. They have been perfectly willing to throw all chaos like to the winds for short-term political advantage. And this is an arena that we have not generally seen that. But could it be the next frontier in trying to eke out a couple votes here, a couple votes there, maybe make the election possible to win? I don't know, it's a rhetorical question. Do you think? I don't know, I'm worried about it, that's all I can say. In any event, they didn't succeed yet, the pressure is gonna continue and it could potentially come up again. But with that said, I wanna turn to a related topic. There's a new election conspiracy being spread throughout the right wing and it just got a massive boost thanks to billionaire man baby Elon Musk. So he was replying to a tweet from End Wokeness, the seemingly Russian bot on Twitter that tries to turn Americans against each other. They posted a tweet talking about the number of voters registering without a photo ID skyrocketing in three key swing states. Holy S, this is very concerning. And to that, Elon Musk says, extremely concerning. See, he agreed with me. Now look, is he being potentially sarcastic there? One would hope that the idea that he could still be posting extremely concerning to everything a right-wing grifter says in a serious fashion seems hard to imagine, but he loves spreading election conspiracy theories. And could he potentially be taking a break from spreading the great replacement theory? 100%. Here is the issue. When you dig into it, even a tiny little bit, what End Wokeness is saying there isn't remotely true. And you're not gonna need to depend on a godless communist like me. Republican secretaries of state are making clear that there's nothing to this theory. So to be clear, here is what End Wokeness is saying is going on. So if you focus on Arizona, Texas, and Pennsylvania, you have sort of a mix of swing states and a state that like theoretically the Democrats want to be in play, but hasn't really been. You have a ton of people who are registering without photo ID. 1.25 billion in Texas, that is a very large number of people. Pennsylvania, more than a half million. Arizona, a quarter million. That is a huge sum of people. It's fictional, it's not true remotely, but if it was true, that would be extremely concerning. And I'm gonna allow a Republican to make clear how ridiculous this tweet is. This is Stephen Richer, the Republican Maricopa County recorder, who responded to this theory in way too much detail. But what they're saying is that the numbers are not clear or not anywhere like what they're saying here. So in Arizona, the number of new voters that have registered in 2024 is 60,000. In fact, Arizona's overall voter rolls are lower than they were in the last election. So End Wokeness claims that 220,000 people have registered without voter ID. a small subset of the total number that have registered when the total number that have registered is a tiny fraction of that number. It's not based on literally anything. And so that's for Arizona there. And again, it's a Republican that's saying that. And they also make clear that the claim that they're registering without photo ID is being made to make you think that we don't know who they are, or that, oh my God, there's this tricky pizzicky way where an undocumented migrant can get a social security number for a temporary work permit and they can use that to register to vote, which means the undocumented are voting. That's not true either. That's not how the system works literally at all. The numbers are made up, the process is made up, and wokeness also is made up, by the way. It's a Russian disinformation op. But anyway, it's not true. And the Republican Secretary of State of Texas, Jay Nelson, also released a statement disproving that the lie. And in this, if we bring it up, there's also a theory as to where potentially that 1.2 million figure came from. But what's important is it did not come from new registrants, and it certainly didn't come from people registering to vote without any kind of ID. It's just made up. And look, I like that the Republican Secretary of State is like trying to come up with a plausible reason, and woke just doesn't care. And wokeness would pull it entirely out of their fictional digital ass if they wanted to, because it's not about shedding light on a process that could lend insecurity to the election. It's about ginning up outrage, vague outrage, cumulative outrage. You tell people every day there's something suspicious going on over there, here, something suspicious. And over time, what you get is tens of millions of Americans who, on a fundamental level, on a level that they cannot express, certainly not with specifics, that something is suspicious. And you don't do that just vaguely to get people to turn against democracy. You do it in anticipation of something. And what NWokeness is doing there, and what every time somebody like NWokeness or Elon Musk is doing, is they're saying, we don't think that Trump is going to win, so how about a plan B? And for plan B, what you need is a lot of people to buy into plan B. And so this is what they're doing there. Once again, in the same way that they were doing it in 2020 and to a lesser extent in 2022, they are trying to lay the groundwork for people to not trust what happens in the election and to potentially sign up for whatever comes after that. Now, and wokeness, you can't expect to know better. And wokeness is a propaganda campaign. For Elon Musk, theoretically, people say that he's a genius. You would think that maybe he would be aware of this. And perhaps he is, actually. Perhaps he is a willing party to this. But take a look at this. He is the owner of the platform where a verified member is spreading baseless, already refuted election conspiracy theories to destroy people's faith in democracy. And rather than actually policing that, fact-checking that, like imagine if Elon Musk responded by retweeting what those Republican secretaries of state said in Texas and Arizona. What a strong signal of support for democracy, support of the truth. Instead, what you get is just, yeah, extremely concerning. You know, I'm not going to look into it all. I don't care fundamentally. I want you, right-wing grifter, to love me. I need you to love me. And that's what we get out of Elon Musk. Anyway, that is unfortunately all the time we have for this segment. We have a lot more to come to close out the first hour of the show, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, so much more to talk about, and I do worry about our ability to fit in, but we're going to do our best turning to this. Ted Cruz does not like when you ask him tough questions, certainly not about his money. And we've got some funny money that came to Ted Cruz to look into right now. So reporter Shannon Ryan had, I don't even think a tough question for Ted Cruz, I think a fair question for him about the fact that his reelection campaign's political arm received a sizable donation from iHeartMedia. You might be familiar with it from like internet radio and podcasting and all that. That is the same media company you might know that produces and distributes The Verdict with Ted Cruz, his podcast. They gave the campaign arm of his political action committee $630,000, $6,850. What you're seeing right there, by the way, that is a separate super PAC that got $215,000 from iHeartMedia. So that's not directly affiliated with Ted Cruz, but it is money that will be used for his reelection. He got far more money, and that's direct money to his campaign. Now, iHeartMedia does lobbying. They've actually done millions upon millions of dollars of lobbying over the course of the last 20 or so years. So it's not like this is new. But the fact that he has a podcast on your platform and now you're effectively giving him money to use for his own political goals seems suspicious and maybe illegal. Full disclosure, by the way, my wife works for iHeartMedia. That said, I'm going to be very critical of their lobbying here, so I don't think it's really a conflict of interest. In any event, Cruz has previously claimed that in the deal in which his podcast was acquired and will be distributed, he is not compensated for it by iHeartMedia. And the reporter Shannon Ryan, who we'll return to, noted that iHeartMedia employs several political lobbyists. That is important. Both parts of that are important. That he's not compensated and that they have lobbyists. And it's important because he can't be compensated because they have lobbyists. It would be impermissible under Senate rules for Cruz to accept gifts except of quote nominal value. So, you know, if they give him a mug with the verdict on it, he could get that. Especially given his position on the Senate Commerce Committee, which theoretically could pass or not pass legislation or regulations that affect iHeartMedia. So he can't be paid by them thanks to Senate rules, which are very lax, but at least they have this restriction. Okay, so he can't be paid and he's not being paid, but nearly $1 million has now been handed over for his exclusive benefit to keep him in office. And so I think that's worthy of a question. Shannon Ryan also thought it was worthy of a question. So she asked, if an entity which employs lobbyists is giving hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to your reelection efforts, how can you say you're not being compensated? And look, he took that question very seriously. I'm kidding. He completely avoided answering the question and distracted, instead saying, you know, it really is sad what's happened to the media, which is the media exists right now seemingly to parrot left-wing Democrat attacks. The group that brought that attack is a left-wing Democrat attack group. And by the way, you know what you didn't mention in your question? The fact that they filed a complaint with the Senate Ethics Committee raising these same issues. You know what the Senate Ethics Committee did? They threw it out. They said it had no basis in law. So all the Democrats are left to do is make false personal attacks. I get you're gonna carry their water, but my request to you is simple. Actually cover the issues. So we're gonna return to the issues. Let's go to his little distraction there. The ethics complaint that he's already faced back in 2022. So it does exist. It's not strictly speaking what he described it as, but it does exist. So he was referencing a 2022 complaint lodged with the Senate Ethics Committee, which challenged the podcast deal initially, when it was initially set up, and not the money that was pumped into the PAC. So he's kind of lying about the fact that this has already been adjudicated by the Senate Ethics Committee. It hasn't. This is new. He does not want it to be adjudicated by the Senate Ethics Committee, but in fact, has not. Now, let's say that it had, though. His defense is the Senate Ethics Committee already looked at it and they said it's cool, which I'll remind you, they didn't. But again, let's say that they did. Okay, the Senate Ethics Committee it's senators on that. Senators who want to be given gifts and money and compensation. Are we pretending that they are like the ultimate arbiters of that which is ethical? And even if you assume that he's not breaking the law, which I haven't seen strong evidence, like very clear evidence that it is breaking the law, it clearly presents ethical issues here. And that is why the attacks against reporter Shannon Ryan from Ted Cruz are so ridiculous. Like all you have is this attack group from the Democrats. No, she's asking the question. Maybe a Democrat attack group brought it up, but now that they did and all the facts are true, they're not wrong in any way, she has a legitimate question. You know who else does? Me, maybe you in the audience. It seems suspicious that $1 million has been given. How are you going to pretend that that is not going to affect your view or your relationship with iHeartMedia when in an election cycle they give you $1 million? Come on. Look, I'm not saying like this should have you locked up or you should have to return the money or you should have to not run for Senate. But just on like a human level, man to man, come on. You're really going to tell me that that's not highly suspicious right there? And he's not going to tell you that. That's the important thing. He is never going to respond to the actual accusations because it's indefensible. He would look utterly ridiculous if he did that. So instead, it's fake news media and Senate Ethics Committee and all this nonsense that doesn't actually address the actual issue. And I will close with this. It's not even my only issue with Ted Cruz. I think that money is highly suspicious. I don't think that iHeartMedia should be giving him money. I don't think he should be giving anybody money. I don't think businesses should be lobbying at all. but you know, it's not up to me. Here's my other issue with Ted Cruz and with Verdict with Ted Cruz, his podcast on iHeartMedia. You want to bring up this graphic? You know what you see there? You see what you can see for any podcast on Apple Podcasts. You can bring it up and you can see the most recent episodes. You could do that for the Damage Report. And if you do, please rate and review us. But what you see there is his past episodes. Now, you might be looking at like the titles of the episodes and you might be like, oh, did he talk about something stupid? No, that's not why I'm bringing up this graphic. You notice something else on this? Bidenomics Makes Home Ownership came out on April 3rd. Biden Woke Easter, No Jesus Allowed, which isn't true at all, came out on April 1st. He had an episode on March 30th. He had an episode on March 29th. He had an episode on March 27th. He had an episode on March 25th. He is a sitting senator and he arguably puts out more content than I do. And this is my full-time job. We put out 5 episodes a day. We're doing just fine. He is recording hours and hours. Those are not short episodes. I thought, okay, maybe he sits down on a Monday and he records 2 hours and then he puts it out. No, it's 40 minutes, 47 minutes, 39 minutes, 38 minutes, 1 hour and 3 minutes, 38 minutes. He is putting out a full episode virtually every day. He's supposed to be a senator. We were raised to believe that it was the greatest deliberative body in the history of the world. But he wouldn't know because he's never there, because he's hosting his podcast instead. And that is his right. And I honestly say, hosting a podcast is great. I love it. I do it all the time. I've put out thousands of podcast episodes. But if you want to do that, Ted Cruz, go do that. Have that be your job. If that's your passion, then follow your passion. Because I'm of the crazy position that being a senator for the great state of Texas is kind of a cool thing itself. And that they deserve in Texas a senator who actually gives a damn about the position and doesn't just see it as a way to promote their stupid content on Apple Podcasts. Anyway, that's not going to get him on any ethical problems, but it probably should. You know, I'm worried about them raising money in certain ways, but I'm also worried about them not doing their goddamn job. And he doesn't seem particularly interested in doing it. Anyway, with that said, we need to turn to other, perhaps more ridiculous content, starting with this.
How do you define wokeness?
Wokeness is the destruction of normalcy
How is that your answer, Chaya Raichik? You're libs of TikTok. You're an expert on this thing, and I know you're an expert. Because you're literally being called in to like state boards of education to advise them on how they can crush trans people into the ground. Your whole thing is wokeness is bad, and that's the best you've got. You know how bad that answer was? If I had been able to script it, I could not have come up with something that made her look more ridiculous. And that's what she came up with herself. And look, all of you are familiar at this point that the people who talk the most about how wokeness is bad very often can't come up with a good argument for what it actually is. But the thing about that is, the first time you're asked a hard question as an anti-woke warrior, okay, maybe you're not prepared to answer because you've only talked to people in your bubble and they don't care what wokeness is. It's just whatever they don't like. So you haven't had to formulate a good answer. But we're past that point. This has happened multiple times now. And so I'm not saying that Chaya Raichik needs to come up with a good answer for me or whatever. I think she's a ridiculous clown. But if you're an anti-woke person, do you not expect more out of your pundits, out of your grifters than that? Like you genuinely care about how wokeness is destroying America or whatever BS you believe. She kind of seems like she's just cosplaying it, doesn't she? Because she can't come up with a good argument. And honestly, it's not even that difficult. I mean, look, I'm not even saying like the actual academic idea of what woke is or whatever, but just like colloquially, you could come up with something like, okay, it's the ability and willingness to look beyond your own hyper-specific life circumstance to try to understand where other people are coming from, the things that affect them, perhaps in different ways, perhaps wholly different ways than they affect yours, and the ways in which that our government, our culture, our economy are set up might produce different outcomes for different people. And the ability to do that requires critical thinking. The willingness to do that requires a level of maturity that people like Chaya Raichik will never be capable of. Now, granted, I think that that's not a bad, you know, off the top of my head explanation of what wokeness is. It doesn't play into her fear mongering, though, which is why she's never going to give that. But whatever it is that they're going to come up with, they need to do better than it's the destruction of normalcy, something about America. That's not good. The thing is, though, that answer is bad, like objectively, but it's actually a very good answer from their point of view, because it's vague, it's ill-formed, and that's what it's supposed to be. The idea of woke is not supposed to be about anything. It's supposed to be about everything. It's supposed to be about whatever we want it to be right now. You know, maybe it's DEI in Boeing today. Tomorrow it's going to be that Julia Garner was cast as Silver Surfer or whatever. Whatever it is that we don't like, that's what's woke. And honestly, even that is a better answer than she gave. So she really needs to do some work, because that was pathetic. That was embarrassing. Anyway, with that said, that's all the time we have for the first hour of the show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you're watching live, there is, of course, more to come in the aftermath, including an interview. So stick around for that, as well as some interesting news. Lots more to come after this.